You're listening to WIOX Roxbury, community radio at 91.3 FM and streaming on the web at wioxradio.org.
WIOX is supported by the Daily Star, a regional source for community news, commentary, shopping tips, local sports, and community events. The Daily Star's Total Access delivers the newspaper and breaking news throughout the day on any digital device. More information at thedailystar.com. WIOX is supported by Pico Moose Restaurant on Route 28 in Big Indian, featuring farmhouse cuisine prepared with locally grown ingredients and a growing wine and craft beer list. Open for dinner Thursday through Monday at 4 p.m. The Pico Moose Tap Room and Lounge serves food and drink until midnight Friday and Saturday. Reservations and information at PicaMooseRestaurant.com or 845-254-6500.
Well, welcome to Healthcetera. I'm Diana Mason, and I'm struggling here with my technology, but let's see if we can't make this work. And... Well, welcome to Healthcetera in the Catskills on WIOX Radio. I'm Diana Mason, trying to do this engineering. I am the host of this program, and this is the second Healthcetera program on WIOX. And in case you missed the first program, let me tell you about what the program's about. Healthcetera in the Catskill focuses on issues that affect the health of individuals, of families, and communities in our region. Now, sometimes we'll take a look at state or national issues and how they affect our region, and we'll do that today. Other times, we'll do a deep dive into initiatives that are promoting health right here in the Catskills. We'll talk health policy and politics. We'll share personal stories of health and illness. We'll explore creative approaches to helping our neighbors live healthy lives and provide listeners with tools to effectively use health and social services. Now, usually I will be on biweekly, alternating with John Riedel's Wellness Wednesdays, and my thanks to him for covering me 2 weeks ago. But as I'm starting this out, I've got some other obligations, and so he and the station will be covering me on a few other times, and the next time that you'll hear Healthcetera will be on November 22nd, right before Thanksgiving. I do welcome your feedback on these programs and your ideas for future programs, and you can email me at healthceteracatskills@gmail.com. That's healthceteracatskills@gmail.com. On today's program, we're going to focus on what's been happening to efforts under the Affordable Care Act that expanded access to reproductive health services for women and some potential rollbacks on access to women's reproductive services that are now being proposed or have already occurred, and how these changes might affect the Catskill region. Now, in each program, I also include, at the opening, a segment that focuses on some of the health and social issues that have been in the news, and this week I have a few issues that I want to highlight. First, a reminder that the Trump administration and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services have continued to discourage, rather than encourage, people to sign up for Medicaid and health insurance on the state and federal insurance exchanges, President Trump cut the marketing budget for outreach efforts to encourage people to sign up for coverage by 90%. So there is not the same level of outreach going on around the country that there had been under the Affordable Care Act to try to discourage people from enrolling. And they've reduced the enrollment period by weeks, and on the federal exchange, it's not available both days on the weekend. Now, concerns about federal efforts to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act have led to uncertainty in the insurance market, with insurance companies scrambling to decide what kind of plans to offer on the exchanges. After the Senate efforts to repeal and replace Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, failed, Senators Lamar Alexander and Patty Murray, Republican and Democrat in the Senate, delivered a bipartisan approach to subsidizing insurance plans for low-income people to keep premiums from increasing and stabilize that insurance market. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said he will bring the bill to a vote on the Senate floor, and he believes he has the votes, if President Trump will support it. That is a big if. He has not indicated strong support for this bill. You can still sign up for coverage, by the way, between November 1 and December 15th. So it's going to be starting next week. You can sign up for coverage for 2018. And for those of you who are living in New York State, you can do so by going to the New York State Exchange website. That's nystateofhealth.ny.gov. Again, that's nystateofhealth.ny.gov. All one word, .ny.gov. On a related issue, the Internal Revenue Service said this week that it is taking steps to enforce one of the most controversial provisions of the Affordable Care Act, the tax penalty people face if they refuse to obtain health insurance. Now, remember, the Affordable Care Act has a mandate that everybody be covered or you will be penalized. Next year, for the first time, the IRS will reject your tax return when filed electronically if you do not complete the information required about whether you have coverage, including whether you are exempt from the so-called individual mandate to have health insurance, or you'll pay a penalty. If you file your tax return on paper, the agency said it could suspend processing of the return and delay any refund you might be owed. This is occurring despite President Trump's statements earlier this year, indicating that he was considering stopping the penalty payments. And finally, the World Health Organization has rescinded its widely criticized invitation to make Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe a goodwill ambassador for the Global Health Agency. Mugabe's government has been implicated in widespread human rights violations, has repressed protesters and political opponents, and has been accused of rigging elections. The global health community, human rights groups, and political leaders criticized the decision to appoint Mugabe as an ambassador, a role that's used to raise awareness of health issues and solutions. It speaks to the connections between human rights and health, which is a framework that the World Health Organization has long embraced, thus leading to questions and criticisms about the World Health Organization's proposed appointment. Well, that's Health Cetera News in the Catskills. I'm Diana Mason, and you're listening to Health Cetera in the Catskills on WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and on MTC Cable Channel 20. We're also streaming live at WIOXradio.org on the web and on any smart device. All right. Well, I'm having trouble with my device again, with this board. Let's see. Here we go. All right. Let me get Lisa.
You wine me and dine me when I was your girl. Promised if I'd be your wife, you'd show me the world. But all I've seen of this old world is a bed and a doctor bill. I'm tearing down your brooder house, 'cause now I've got the pill. All these years I've stayed at home while you had all your fun. And every year that's gone by, another baby's come. There's gonna be some changes made right here on Nursery Hill. You set this chicken your last time, 'cause now I've got the pill. This old maternity dress I've got is going in the garbage. The clothes I'm wearing from now on won't take up so much yardage. Mini skirts, hot pants, and a few little fancy frills. Yeah, I'm making up for all those years since I've got the pill. I'm tired of all your crowing, how you and your hens play. While holding a couple in my arms, another's on the way. This chicken's done tore up her nest, and I'm ready to make a deal. And you can't afford to turn it down, 'cause you know I've got the pill.
Well, that was Loretta Lynn's The Pill from 1975. It's been described as a celebration by a woman who just gained control of her reproductive health through access to birth control. So it's quite appropriate for the rest of today's program. There's a growing concern among some sectors of our country, including in the Catskill region, that women's access to reproductive health services is under assault at the federal level through actions taken or proposed to be taken by the Trump administration and the Department of Health and Human Services, as well as by Congress. The Affordable Care Act, again also known as Obamacare, strengthened women's access to reproductive health services in a number of ways, including by expanding health insurance coverage and providing many women with access to no-cost birth control. I'm pleased to have two guests join me in discussing these issues today. First in studio is Deborah Marcus, the Chief Executive Officer of Family Planning of South Central New York. She's a frequent guest on WIOX programs, and it's my pleasure to welcome you, Deborah, to Health Cetera for the first time, if I can get your mic on.
Thank you, Diana. Is my mic on?
Yes, it is. Good. And tell us a little bit, before I introduce our other guest, tell us a little bit about Family Planning of South Central New York.
Family Planning of South Central New York has been providing reproductive health care, comprehensive sexuality education, and advocacy in upstate New York for more than 75 years. We serve women, men, adults, and children here in Delaware County, Otsego County, Broome, and Shenango County. All of our services are available regardless of income or insurance coverage. The Affordable Care Act has certainly helped women be able to afford health care, but health care has always been available at Family Planning. And if these attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act or to undercut it and sabotage it succeed, Family Planning will still be there. Our doors will always be open, because reproductive health care is so vital to women, to families' well-being.
And I want to point out that you said you serve men as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's the other half of the equation. We serve women and men. In fact, Family Planning of South Central New York is the STD clinic and the anonymous testing site for the public health departments of Delaware and Otsego counties. So a fair number of the men who come to us are coming to us for that reason.
Great. Well, I'm also pleased to introduce Lisa David, the CEO and president of Public Health Solutions, who's joining us by phone. She's a longtime women's health advocate. So I'm delighted, Lisa, that you could join me in this discussion today. Now, have I properly mic'd you here? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can. Good. I've done it. All right. Well, tell listeners just a little bit about Public Health Solutions and what that is.
Yes, I'd be delighted to. Public Health Solutions is a human service organization. We're located in New York City, and our primary focus is on working in partnership with families, women and children, most of whom live in immigrant communities or low-income communities, to help these families get off to the best start possible. We focus on providing access to benefits, like we enroll people in health insurance, we enroll them if they're eligible for food stamps, we provide food and nutrition, particularly healthy food and nutrition programs. We have a number of programs that are focused on women when they're pregnant, helping them and their children and families through the first 2 or 3 years of their child's life with early childhood development and ensuring health and promoting parents to meet their educational goals and employment goals as well. And we actually do reproductive health as well, both direct services, and we work with community health centers to build contraceptive services into their practices. We also run tobacco control work, smoke-free work, and work a lot with youth to advocate in their communities to reduce access to tobacco.
And I might note that, let's see, it's an excellent organization, and for transparency purposes, I am a member of your board of directors, so I want to just disclose that potential conflict of interest in having you on, but I'm delighted that you're on, Lisa. Thank you so much, and thank you for your good work. So let's start our discussion today about how the Affordable Care Act expanded women's access to birth control and what the impact of this has been. Now, I'm going to start first with Deborah talking about, if you would just talk about what it was like before the ACA.
Oh, certainly. The Affordable Care Act made significant positive changes to women's health insurance coverage and therefore to women's health. Prior to the Affordable Care Act, women were often charged more for insurance coverage than men. Insurance often didn't cover conditions that were either exclusive to women, such as maternity, or were more prevalent among women, mental health issues, depression, obesity, eating disorders. And conditions that were common to women were considered disqualifying pre-existing conditions. They were things like if a woman had ever had a cesarean section, if she'd had breast cancer, if she had been the victim of domestic violence, if she was currently pregnant, if any of those things were part of a woman's current health or health history, then either she could be denied insurance coverage or the insurance available would be prohibitively expensive, or they might put in a waiting period. So, for instance, if a woman was currently pregnant and she applied for health insurance, they might say, okay, you have to wait until you are no longer pregnant. Those things changed under the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act also said, well, not the Affordable Care Act specifically, but regulations enacted pursuant to the Affordable Care Act said that certain medications and certain treatments that women needed would be available without a copay. What the Affordable Care Act said was a number of preventive services would be available without a copay. In terms of women's health care, the Affordable Care Act, I think perhaps because it's always been controversial to talk about women's health care, they kind of shoved it off to federal agencies and said they will enact regulations. But the regulations enacted included contraception without a copay. And that is so critical, especially because some of the most effective methods of contraception, what we call long-acting reversible contraception, IUDs, implants, are very, very expensive, can range anywhere from a few hundred dollars to $1,000. So if a woman had an insurance policy that, yes, indeed did cover contraception, but she had a deductible or they only covered 80%, that might mean $200 out of pocket, and it made it prohibitively expensive. So the Affordable Care Act made health care and reproductive health care so much more accessible for women after the Affordable Care Act.
Let me bring Lisa into this before you go on with that. So Lisa, anything you want to add to that, the picture of what the Affordable Care Act did for women from a reproductive health standpoint, from a national perspective? And also, would you comment on what the Hobby Lobby case did to that?
Sure. I'll just add a couple of small points. One of the things that the Affordable Care Act did was it abolished the lifetime limits on coverage. And particularly for women and with maternity, if you had a baby that needed to go into the NICU, you could rack up costs that would meet your lifetime limit within a matter of months, which meant, in effect, that you no longer had insurance coverage. So, again, that was more prevalent for women in terms of the kinds of conditions that happens for. The other thing I want to say is that the Medicaid expansion in the Affordable Care Act, if states chose to do it, it was originally intended that all states would have it, but that was the one area where the Supreme Court said that had to be voluntary. It expanded the types of people who could get access to Medicaid. Previously, you really needed to be a pregnant woman or a woman with children and the children to be eligible for Medicaid. And this really allowed single people and people without families to get access to Medicaid coverage, which is quite affordable. So that was another significant change. So once the Supreme Court actually upheld most of the Affordable Care Act, except for making the Medicaid expansion voluntary, one of the biggest areas of challenge and one of the first groups that came to challenge the Affordable Care Act was the Catholic Church. And so there was, after a series of negotiations, kind of a workaround established for religious organizations. And so churches and church-owned universities and hospitals could actually get out of providing contraception, that was the benefit that they were really worried about, by writing a letter saying that it was against their religious faith. And then the next challenge that came from Hobby Lobby, a craft store more in the Midwest and West Coast, that is a privately owned for-profit company with the owners being religious families but not, you know, faith-based organizations, and they said that they felt that the provision of contraception violated their faith and moral filters, and they didn't want to have to provide it to their employees. And so that wound up also going to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court allowed them to be exempt. So in essence, private, you know, for-profit, non-religious organizations could go through a mechanism to not provide contraception, which was quite a dash at the benefits, the hard-earned benefit that women had received. So that was a big deal. And the interesting thing, actually, that came out through that period of time was there were a lot of archdioceses and other religious organizations who, unbeknownst to them, were all providing contraceptive coverage. So this was actually the norm, that it would be covered. But what really, you know, happened was that it was provided now for women without having to pay any out-of-pocket costs. So this was a big dent.
Yeah.
In the contraceptive mandate.
But despite that...
Nonetheless, right now in the United States, 55 million women have access to birth control without any out-of-pocket costs.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, the number of women paying for contraception in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
fell from 21% of insured women in 2012, and just 2 years later, less than 4% of women had to pay for contraception, paid anything out of pocket for contraception. So it had a profound impact.
So what, let me turn, though.
And I don't know if you want to talk now about what that meant, but
no, let me
we'll
pause
can
for
certainly go into that.
Let me pause for a moment and ask Deborah, what was the impact then that we've seen in the Catskills since this coverage for women's contraception was in the Affordable Care Act? What impact did it have?
Well, the impact, more women had insurance coverage. Medicaid already covered it in New York State. In New York State, we are in a somewhat better position than many other parts of the country, because in New York State, under something called the Women's Health and Wellness Act, which was passed a number of years ago, the key sponsor was Senator John Bonasek, who represents part of Delaware County, who is a Republican, who stood up to the Catholic Conference and insisted that birth control coverage, contraceptive coverage, be included in this. It took several years for the bill to get through because of his insistence on that. So in New York State, any insurance plan that provides prescription coverage has to include contraceptive coverage. So we already had that here in New York State. What the Affordable Care Act did, however, was make it much more affordable when it took out the copays. Now, we also are fortunate in New York State because last June, Governor Cuomo put in a regulation that said that there would be no copays on contraception. Now, that was already true in the Affordable Care Act, but we've now got that in New York State regulation, not law yet, but regulation. So we have always been somewhat protected in New York State.
And Medicaid expansion was important.
Medicaid expansion is huge. At Family Planning of South Central New York, 75% of the patients that we see have incomes at or below 150% of the federal poverty level. Now, at Family Planning, whether or not people had insurance coverage, whether or not they had Medicaid, we would always see them. But there aren't a lot of healthcare providers like Family Planning. So those people who were struggling, who were above the threshold of Medicaid eligibility, Medicaid is expanded, more people are covered. Again, in New York State, we were somewhat better off because New York State has always been more generous with Medicaid benefits. We had things like Family Health Plus. I think we will be somewhat protected if these attempts that Trump is doing to undercut the Affordable Care Act, the assault on Medicaid in the proposed tax bill, will make it difficult for New York State to continue funding that which the federal government no longer does.
And we'll get into that a little bit more in a minute. I want to raise the
Diana?
Yes, Lisa.
I mean, in New York State, which already was much more generous with Medicaid eligibility than many states in the country, we nonetheless had 2 million more people that gained access to health insurance because of the ACA. And nearly half of them are Medicaid, and 1.1 million of them are on other insurance plans available through the exchanges. But half of those are from an essential plan that New York established, which is if you're 200% of the poverty level or lower, your health care premium could be zero, but no more than $20 a month. So very, very affordable. And that came through federal funding. That was a use in New York State of the federal funding that came through the ACA, most of it. There's some state funding, too. So it cut in half the number of people in New York State that were uninsured. So it's a big impact.
Yeah. Absolutely. We are seeing that at Family Planning. It used to be that as much as 20% of our patients came in and had no insurance coverage. I mean, we would certainly encourage them to get Medicaid if they were Medicaid eligible, but they could be a bit over. Probably it's down to 3 or 4% of our patients don't have insurance coverage. And that is so important also for all those other services. Now, we would always see them at Family Planning, but we are limited to reproductive health care. This way, yes, I agree with Lisa. Many more people now have health insurance, and it is critical.
And we should just pause for a moment and point out that the proposals to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act would, some of them were proposing to give a block grant to the states for Medicaid funding and to cap those. So really trying to reduce spending on Medicaid. So a comment, if you would, about why this is not an okay thing to do. Why shouldn't we leave it up to the states and just put a cap on funding?
Well, the problem with either a block grant or a per capita is that there is less money. And if there is less money, when they talk about states' flexibility, the only flexibility they have is that they can either cover less people and or provide less benefits. So the Affordable Care Act was really not about health care. It was about health insurance. So when there's talk about let's make these policies affordable by providing junk plans that don't in fact cover anything, that in fact when people become pregnant, they discover they don't have maternity care or they don't have a prescription coverage, we would be back in the same situation that we were before the Affordable Care Act, where people do not have access to affordable, accessible health care because their insurance plan covers nothing.
And Lisa, let me ask you, so why I want to get into why this is such an important issue. So I have heard people say, look, women need to take responsibility for their sexuality. They need to cover their own birth control, et cetera. Now, I do have a young woman as a family member who is sexually active. And several years ago, she was in college. She was barely able to make ends meet. And I would take her the free, New York City used to offer free condoms with the subway signs on them. And I
would. We offer free condoms at
Family Planning. Great. So I would take those by the bucket loads and I would take them to her. And at one point I said to her, so you're using the condom? Well, she had run out. And I said, well, so you're using condoms though, right? And she said, I can't afford it. And I said, what do you mean you can't afford? She said, have you ever looked at the price of condoms? And I went into the drugstore and looked at the price of condoms and was stunned that somebody who really is struggling to just feed themselves and pay rent doesn't have the disposable income to put towards condoms. For people who say, well, this really, I shouldn't have to pay for somebody else's birth control, whether Medicaid, through my taxes, or through an insurance plan, what do you say to them, Lisa?
Well, if you look, I think people don't understand sort of the reality of the large number of the people in New York and in the United States who live from paycheck to paycheck or whatever they're doing. 63% of Americans could not pay a $1,000 health care bill without going into debt. 40% of Americans couldn't pay a $100 health care bill without going into debt. And I know in my client base, these are people who are choosing between health care or food on the table, or the transportation to get their kids to school. It shows a lack of understanding of what a large number of people in the United States live like to say, oh, everybody should just have to pay for it. And by the way, why is this the only service that we think people should be personally responsible for? Mm-hmm. I don't particularly want to pay for Viagra, but I do. In my health insurance, mm-hmm. If everybody could pick and choose what they didn't want to pay for, it wouldn't be insurance. Mm. But people don't understand the affordability of this. And when co-pays were in existence, the reality is, for oral contraceptives, the co-pay equaled the cost of the drug, pretty much. Women had to pay almost the entire cost. They weren't using the more effective, more expensive methods because the amount of money that they required out of pocket to get it was more than they could afford. And we know that more women now have access to contraception, are using contraception regularly, and that has had an impact on the lowest abortion rate since before Roe v. Wade, nationally and in New York State, much lower teen pregnancy and teen birth rates. It has made sense. It has been good for women, and it has been good for saving healthcare costs.
And contraception is such a cost-effective use of money. If you think about that, contraception is so much cheaper than obstetrical care, than birth afterwards. And we think about, at Family Planning of South Central New York, we certainly do see a number of teens. But the bulk of our patients are women in their 20s and 30s who are either single parents or there's another partner in the house, but they're balancing, they're going paycheck to paycheck, as Lisa said. They are managing to support the two or three or four children they already have. But if they had one more child, they could end up on public assistance. It could throw the whole thing off. Contraception is important so that young women can stay in school, can get an education. It's important so women can stay in the workforce so that they can be paying taxes. There are a number of very conservative Republicans here in Delaware County who are big supporters of family planning because it means that women stay in the workforce and continue to be tax-paying citizens. But when people can rationally plan, when they can plan the number of children they're going to have, when they can space their pregnancies, pregnancies that are spaced about 2 years apart, the baby is healthier, the mother is healthier. It just makes so much sense. And really, contraception is such a cost-effective way. All those people who say, why should my tax dollars or my insurance dollars support that? They are saving money by having contraception, by making it easier for women to be able to access reproductive health care.
And I think the whole political controversy, moral controversy over contraception is newer. The first major government-funded family planning program, Title X, was signed into law by Richard Nixon. This was a bipartisan-supported issue because it was good for women and it made sense economically. It's only in more, recent years that this has become such a hot button.
So let me just remind listeners that you're listening to Health Cetera in the Catskills. I'm Diana Mason, the producer and host of this program, and I'm talking today with Deborah Marcus, who is the CEO of the Family Planning of South Central New York, and with Lisa David, the CEO and president of Public Health Solutions. And we're talking about some of the federal attempts to undermine women's access to reproductive services.
This is WIOX, wildly diverse.
WIOX is supported by the Delaware County Chamber of Commerce, a catalyst for sustainable economic prosperity in the Catskills, fostering cooperation, forging partnerships, promoting tourism, providing legislative advocacy, and building strong community ties throughout the region. More information at 607-746-2281 or delawarecounty.org.
And just for a weather update, we're going to see Thursday have some showers, particularly in the afternoon, mostly cloudy with a high near 51, northwest wind 7 to 11 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation is 30%. And then on Friday, sunny with a high near 58, west wind around 6 miles per hour. And Saturday, sunny with a high near 61. And then Sunday, it looks like the showers are returning. So at least a few good days coming up in the weather. So returning to our discussion of what's going on at the federal level that speaks to potentially undermining women's access to reproductive health services, I want to point out that as we talk about the idea of restricting access to birth control, and Deborah Marcus, what you just said about the idea of economics, the economics of this, and the fact that for some women, they're already struggling to make ends meet. At the same time that there is this potential restriction on access to birth control, we are having Congress speak of rolling back funding for WIC, the Women, Infant, Child Nutrition Program, and obviously for also a program for unemployment supports and other kinds of social programs. And so it's rather curious to think about why would you not want to support women's access to these services that can help them control their own fertility and the size of their families.
Right, and curiously, since the administration was unsuccessful in repealing the Affordable Care Act and gutting Medicaid through the health care repeal efforts, they're now trying to gut Medicaid and Medicare through the tax bill. And when you think about it right now, Medicaid at this point pays for half the births of women in the United States. Medicaid pays for three-quarters of subsidized family planning, the types of services provided at Family Planning of South Central New York to women at or below the federal poverty level. Medicaid right now covers 1 in 5 women and 1 in 4 women of reproductive age. So here we're saying, let's cut back on access to contraception, and yet let's also cut the funding source that's paying for healthcare, that's paying for births. It's really, it's truly an attack on women. It also makes very little sense. I mean, you're going to cut, you're cutting payments for prenatal care, cutting obstetrical costs, and you're also cutting access to birth control. There's, it's not rational.
So, Lisa David,
let me add to that. They're also cutting children. I mean, note that we have not yet funded the Children's Health Insurance Plan. And a lot of maternal and early child development programs, they're all both waiting reauthorization that is not forthcoming. And I do want to say maternal mortality, it's a big issue in the United States, and it's a big issue in New York.
The rate is going up in the United States when other countries' rate is going down,
which is shocking.
Absolutely. Shocking. We rank 60th of industrialized countries, and New York ranks 46th out of 50 states. So we're not only, not allowing women to choose when they're going to have a baby, we are also not doing the best that we can to ensure that they have a safe delivery, and then we're not supporting the children once they're born.
So the Trump administration is proposing a rule change in terms of who can apply for these exemptions from having to cover birth control. Lisa David, what's being proposed here?
They're essentially proposing that any employer can decide not to meet the contraceptive mandate based on either their faith or their moral convictions. So it doesn't even have to be a religious reason. So ostensibly, any employer could get out of providing contraception for their employees. And this goes for, I have to say, it's a major theme of this administration under the guise of promoting or returning to religious freedom, that we're going to put a high priority on allowing religious objections to almost any law or regulation as it comes out.
And religious.
So Jeff Sessions, the Justice Department, released that rule. And in addition to saying that the LGBT community is now able to be discriminated against by employers, but that it should go into all government agency lenses for everything that they do, that we need to eliminate barriers for faith-based organizations to have as big a role as possible. And in fact, the Health and Human Services Agency just released its strategic plan for the next 4 years, and in its opening paragraph, it clarifies that the constituency of Health and Human Services are lives from the moment of conception, so essentially saying life begins at conception, through natural death, meaning we're not going to provide any aid to dying.
Yeah.
And then you see in every single program area that, and it's mentioned 40 times, that we're going to eliminate barriers and promote having faith-based organizations provide services for HHS, and they've eliminated any mention of the LGBT community and minority communities. Mm. So this is just the beginning. You know, what we are seeing now is sort of the foundation being built, and it's across all agencies, for religion to be the frame in which any regulations and administrative rules and the enforcement of such are considered.
And religion loosely defined to expand it to being moral conscience. Deborah.
If we can go back for a minute to those interim emergency regulations that were put in that expanded the exemption for employers having to provide insurance that included birth control. Even under the Hobby Lobby, there was an exemption, but there was an accommodation. And the way the accommodation worked was the employer who was paying for the insurance would not have to pay for the cost of contraception. There was a rather a convoluted process where the insurance company actually paid for it, and the insurance company was reimbursed by not having to pay some other federal fee that it would have had to pay. So in fact, Hobby Lobby or the limited number of employers were not paying for it, but the employees still had a way to access it. Under these interim emergency regulations that were propagated by Trump, there is no such the accommodation exists, but they don't have to use it, which means that we're no longer talking, the original exemption was just for churches, whoever worked for churches. And then it got bigger. So it's if a Catholic organization is running a hospital or a food kitchen or whatever.
Or if the owners
Hobby Lobby,
of a
the owners
private
don't want to do it.
Yeah,
right.
Business.
They don't
have
a moral
objection.
For it, but the employees still had a way of, it would still be in the insurance plan. That accommodation is no longer required. And there is no appeal process for these exemptions that, as Lisa said, pretty much every employer can claim now.
And so what's the impact going to be? Lisa, on a national level, what do you think? And in the state as a whole? But national level, I'll have Deborah chime in on state.
Well, at the national level, we're turning back the clock. We're throwing up barriers to women getting the kind of reproductive health care that they've gotten used to having, which has had really great outcomes for them. There's no doubt about it. We're going back to the days when we were going to have more people going bankrupt from medical bills, and we're going to see an erosion of all the progress that there's been in increased uptake of effective contraception and decreases in unintended pregnancy and decreases in teen pregnancy and decreases in abortion.
And Deborah, in New York State and our region, Catskill region?
In New York State, we are, as I said before, protected because we have the Women's Health and Wellness Act, and we have these regulations that Governor Cuomo put in with the no copays. But as we can see on the federal level, regulations are easier to get rid of than legislation. You have a new chief executive, whether it's the president or a governor, and regulations can be changed. So that's why I'm going to do a little push for a bill that is in the has been proposed in the New York State Legislature. I believe it has passed the Assembly, but not the Senate yet. It's called the Comprehensive Contraceptive Coverage Act. I would urge all of our listeners to call your senators. Your senators in this area are probably Senator Seward, Jim Seward, possibly Fred Akshar, John Bonasek, and tell them that you support the Comprehensive Contraceptive Coverage Act so we would have legislative protection, not just regulatory protection. It does go farther than the Women's Health and Wellness Act. That would be a whole nother show, Diana, if I went on to describe it. In New York State, we are somewhat protected, but we want to be more protected. So that's a push for the Contraceptive Coverage Act.
So I want to, we only have a few minutes left, and I want to talk a little bit about where this region's policymakers stand on the issues of women's access to reproductive health services. So we're talking about, I'm going to ask Lisa David if you would address the two U.S. senators that we have, and Deborah, if you would talk about the two congressional representatives. Lisa, start with the U.S. Senator Schumer and Gillibrand.
Schumer and Gillibrand, both senators are true champions of women's access to reproductive health care, soup to nuts, and have, you know, supported legislation, sponsored legislation, and you couldn't ask for two better representatives on this topic in Congress. So they are completely reliable. They are both very outspoken and part of the champions that reproductive organizations rely on to help protect women's access to reproductive health care.
Great. And
I agree Deborah? Completely with Lisa, and I would encourage our listeners to don't forget to thank Senators Schumer and Gillibrand, because too often we just call and complain. So when we're making these phone calls, we also should call them and thank them for being such champions. Unfortunately, in the House, this area is represented. New York 19 is Congressman John Faso. New York 22, which is a little bit farther over, but we at Family Planning also serve Broome County, is Claudia Tenney. Both John Faso and Claudia Tenney had long careers in the New York State Assembly, where I don't believe either of them ever supported anything that we at Family Planning were supported. They really were not supportive of reproductive health care, women's health care. They certainly were opposed to safe and legal abortion, and they were really not supportive of a number of, you know, expanding comprehensive sexuality education, any of those things. They have continued that in the Congress. I've had a number of conversations with John Faso. It's a little bit harder to get hold of Claudia Tenney. John Faso has pointed out to me that in one committee vote, he did support Planned Parenthood. He, however, voted in favor. He was one of the strong voices in favor of the legislation which would have repealed the Affordable Care Act and which would have had devastating consequences for women's reproductive health. However, I'm an optimist. I always think that people can be persuaded, so I would encourage everyone to please contact John Faso, contact Claudia Tenney, and tell them that you, if you do indeed support women having access to affordable contraception, to insurance coverage for maternity care, for all of those things that we got in the Affordable Care Act. If you want those to continue, then please call John Faso, please call Claudia Tenney, and tell them you want them to perhaps make the Affordable Care Act better, but certainly not undermine it.
So, again, just a few minutes here, and I hate to open this can of worms, but I feel we have to just open it, just peek at it. The proposal by Congress, although it's not real clear what they're going to propose, we have a sense of it, for huge tax cuts. What impact do you see? What are the dangers of these tax cuts? The argument is that while there is not a direct benefit to the middle class and lower income people, that it will be a trickle-down effect. But in Kansas, we saw Sam Brownback try that, and it failed miserably. So what is your take? And Lisa, I'll start with you and then let Deborah have the last word on what are your concerns about this tax cut package? Or maybe you're not concerned. Maybe I'm making the wrong assumption that we should be supportive of this.
So I will also add that Indiana, the home of our Vice President Pence, also is touted as being the model state for tax cuts, and they have had no trickle-down effect either from what they've had, and have one of the lower tax rates of any state in the United States. I'm very concerned because these tax cuts, which really only benefit the most wealthy of our nation's citizens, reduce significant amounts of revenues that's available to the government to spend. And all economists agree that the kind of growth that you get isn't equal to the amount of reduction in revenues, but we've been here before. We've seen it at the state level, and we've been here before at the federal level, and it has not produced the kind of wage growth and economic growth that is always promised. But there is significant trillions of dollars left for us to have available to the government to spend in support of our citizens. And it always comes down to they're going to cut social services. They're going to cut health care and social services and preserve defense spending. We'll have more interest payments in terms of the debt, but there will be less money to spend on government services, and it's not going to translate to the kind of wage growth and job growth that is fantasized.
And that was Lisa David, CEO and President of Public Health Solutions, and now Deborah Marcus, who is the CEO of Family Planning of South Central New York.
Thank you, Diana. The proposed tax bill would substantially decrease the amount of money coming to New York State. For many years, New York State, and this is a bipartisan effort, whether we've had a Republican governor or a Democratic governor, whether we have a Republican Senate and Assembly or a Democratic one, they have recognized the importance and the cost effectiveness of reproductive health care and affordable and accessible contraception. So when there have been federal cuts, New York State has done the best they could to make up that difference. I've been doing this for over 25 years, and we are really lucky to be in New York State. But the amount of cuts that would come to New York State with the proposed tax bill, particularly the getting rid of the deductibility of state and federal taxes, so much less money would be coming into New York. They're also talking, the way they're going to pay for these tax cuts are very large cuts in Medicaid and Medicare. I think New York State would not have the money to make up for all the cuts we would get from the federal government. So it's very, very dangerous.
So hopefully we can talk more about this tax issue. I think it's a huge issue for our region as well as for the nation. And those of you who aren't aware of the evidence that the trickle-down effect does not work, take a look at what happened to Kansas. It really is a lesson, and I'm shocked that we have a Congress that is ignoring that evidence. But it doesn't seem that evidence makes a difference, not only to this president, but also to this Congress. So,
or science. Science doesn't seem to make a difference.
Science does not seem to make a difference. So, I want to thank both Lisa David and Deborah Marcus for coming on to this program today. Thank you both very much for taking the time on this
thank
important
issue.
Thank
you for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I hope that I welcome your comments on today's program. You can send me an email at healthceteracatskills@gmail.com. That's healthceteracatskills, healthceteracatskills. @gmail.com. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of Health Cetera. I am the producer and the host of Health Cetera in the Catskills. You're listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and on MTC Cable Channel 20. We also stream live at WIOXradio.org, on the web, and on many smart devices. Have a great day. Thank you.
You're listening to WIOX Roxbury, community radio at 91.3 FM and WIOXradio.org.
WIOX is supported by Ulster County Tourism, celebrating the four-season pleasure.